Wow, folks, not a dull moment here. Some pretty interesting tales on the phone lines. I don't know if you can top the callers we had in that last section. I hope you're having as much fun as I am. I'm George Knapp in tonight for George Norrie, and we'll be back to the phone lines right after this on Coast to Coast AM. East of the Rockies, Dave in Minnesota. Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, George. Thanks for keeping the night interesting for us truck drivers.
Absolutely. That's what we're here for.
Okay, well, I've heard some weird stories tonight. I don't think I can top any of them. I could. You'd have to wait for the book. The thing is this, I want to say, there's going to be no disclosure because they've already done it in selected groups. Back in the 60s, the Air Defense Center in Fort Bliss, Texas, they had film of things coming out of the sky when they were testing the V-2 rockets, which they had captured from Germany. These things are about twice as big around as a rocket. They had film of at least three of them coming out, circling this rocket as accelerating. And they don't go slow, but kept their distance away from it, all around it as it disappeared into the sky. They have other things like that, too. But they show it to you with no comment. That was back in the 60s.
Meaning you were you in the military at Fort Bliss?
Correct.
How long were you there, and under what circumstances did they show this stuff to you?
Yeah, when you're going to a school for air defense.
Everybody? Yeah, so they pulled you in a room and put on a movie and show you this stuff, and no comment?
No comment. This is for your own information. No comment.
You know, I've heard those stories, heard stories about Fort Bliss, heard stories about similar kind of film that exists somewhere, and similar kind of incidents with different missile and rocket tests over the years. Would love to see it. My gosh, Dave, I don't know who is the keeper of that film, but I sure would like to catch a couple of minutes of it myself.
Well, look for it, Freeman Refreshment Act, you could... check out what the Air Defense School has there, and maybe you'll find it.
Did you ever talk to your fellow servicemen after that, or were you told to just not discuss it?
Nobody talked about it. We just looked at it, dumbfounded, and shut up.
Did you ever tell anybody about it afterward? I mean, before tonight, or did you tell your family years later?
No, didn't tell anybody like that. I have told a couple of friends, years later. Because there's been other instances, too. I've heard U-2 pilots talking about big ones. And now it's starting to move away. They can't keep up. And so things like that, sort of snippets of information.
It drives you crazy, doesn't it, to think that somebody has a storehouse of information? You hear these stories about pilots who record things on gun cameras and... they get back to the base and somebody with a briefcase locks it up and takes it away to places unknown. It drives you crazy to think that someone is a keeper of those secrets and that we're not allowed to know.
Oh, you bet.
But, it's something, Dave, something that Whitley Strieber told me a long time ago when I first started in the field looking into UFOs. He told me, for all these secrets kept by the government and all the dirty tricks they played to keep a lid on this thing, the true architects of the secrecy are the visitors, whoever they are, ETs or dimensionals, because they're the ones who have decided to not reveal themselves in an incontrovertible way. They haven't landed on the White House lawn. They haven't done it in a way that their presence could no longer be denied. They've decided that they appear to some of us sometimes and not to others. And so our government sort of takes their its cue from them.
Yes, I believe that.
Dave, I appreciate you sharing that story with us. If you figure out to ever talk to any of your fellow servicemen and figure out who's got that film, I sure would like a screening. Thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, Mike in Livermore, California. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, George.
Good morning.
I finally get to talk to you. I've talked to every other host on the show.
Well, thanks for being with us tonight. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm sorry I'm not going to get as wild as the rest.
Oh, come on.
The lady that called about that letter,
yes?
She contacts you, see if it has any connection with the Fabian Society out of England.
I don't know about that. Tell me about it.
Well, they were the beginning of the progressive movement. Woodrow Wilson studied under them. They started Rogue Scholar, all that stuff that you can go into Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, it all leads up into the Illuminati, One World Order, all that, banking. But I'd be curious to know if this guy had any connection, or if the Fabian Society had any connection with him. If you go into a show on that, that's something to look into.
Yeah, that's not a bad topic. I'm getting a couple of emails. I haven't had a chance to read them yet, but a couple of emails about William Carr Books, which I think that's the author she mentioned.
That's what drew me into it, was the name William Carr, because that's somebody Glenn Beck talked about. He was the one that I learned about the Fabian Society from. I mean, a lot of people think Glenn Beck is just some political hack like Hannity or Rush Limbaugh or any of the others, you know, just pundits making money, have a radio show. But he did a lot of research into all this stuff, beginning of the progressive movement, stuff like that. So he's another way to look if you're going to go that direction. But, you know, I'm kind of curious, what's your opinion on the Occupy movement? The way the world, I mean, this whole thing is such a setup. If you listen to Alex Jones or anybody else, the world bankers, the Bilderbergs, all that, I mean, everything is unfolding exactly like a perfectly laid plan. As far as our economy is just going to fold, Obama just signed off with the executive order that now we don't have to be attacked for martial law to happen. It could just be an economic collapse.
Yeah, I read that, and I'm amazed that there hasn't been more mainstream media, I guess amazed in one way and not amazed in another, mainstream media attention for that story. That executive order is pretty scary. I mean, seizing the power to seize control of food and food production and just about everything, and why that isn't a front-page story everywhere, I don't really understand.
Well, you do understand, George.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've been in the news business a long time, and I've never had somebody tell me that I can't write a story. I haven't had the Illuminati show up and say, you can't do that one.
It's not a matter of, you got to look at it this way. It's not them saying you can't. It's them saying to others, do this story. You know, come on. How many people in this country, this is ridiculous to me. I discussed this with a friend of mine tonight. Why is the world in such chaos? Why don't people listen to coast, understand what's going on, geopolitical? Why? They're watching American Idol.
Well, I can't argue with you there. And the Kardashians, I guess. You asked me my opinion.
Yeah, and, you know, there's more young people who probably know the name Snooki than they do George Washington.
You asked me my opinion of the Occupy movement. It's a mixed bag, of course, but in general, I can understand why people are angry. I'm surprised that more people aren't angry. As I told you in the beginning of this program, 100,000 families in this city have lost their homes to foreclosure through no fault of their own. It's not like they're just welching on their bills and folding. I mean, they lost their jobs because of games that were played by bankers on Wall Street. Guys who made millions and millions of dollars, who own multiple homes and are still making money now, drove the world economy to the brink. Millions of people affected, lost jobs, homes. People have committed suicide. They've lost their children. They've got divorces. So I can understand why the Occupy movement exists. I can understand why people are mad, especially in Wall Street. I'm just surprised more people aren't angry.
Well, you know, and the thing is, I'm right there with you. And it was all orchestrated, and it continues to be orchestrated by this government. I mean, they were the ones who put the regulations in place for the banks to make the loans to these people. Why? Because it was all a plan for it to fail, to drag our economy down. As far as the Occupy movement goes, though, I'm there with them in theory, you know, against this. My thing is, it's like the year of spring and anything else. You just got a mass of people out there angry, and they're going to get out there and they're going to, you know, without any organization, they're going to protest and everything else. And then, unfortunately, you have these people come in and then they start taking them over, and that's the direction it goes. You look at Egypt right now, the Muslim Brotherhood steps right into that role. They're seizing American citizens. They're threatening Israel. They want to go to Sharia law. The same thing in this country. The communists move in, the anarchists, whatever. They don't have a plan. They just want to overthrow it. And that's what they get. They suck in people like me. Well, not me, because I'm not out there doing it. Until you tell me what your plan is, once you overthrow this, I'm not going to join in. But there's so many people who are frustrated, like you said, lost their homes, everything else, that just fall right in line with this, and they're just they're playing into the game.
Well, I don't know. I think anger is a good start. It's a good starting point. It's a matter of channeling it, though. That's the challenge. And I haven't seen any evidence the Occupy movement has really managed to channel anything. Today in Las Vegas, actually yesterday in Las Vegas, three people involved in mortgage scams were sentenced to prison. Now, these three got long prison sentences. Turns out, though, they're not bankers. They were people stealing from the banks. We haven't had any prosecutions of banksters, I should say, at all that I know of, for this transfer of wealth was something on the order of $14 trillion. People should be going
exactly
to jail.
Exactly, but now look at it this way. They did what was within the law, a lot of them. I'm not saying these guys that were convicted, they're guys they throw under the bus so they can make it look like, oh, we're trying to clean this up. But if you really look at it, all these bankers and these hedge funders and these speculators and everybody else who caused all this mess was following the direction of our government, telling them to lax a regulation. You must make loans to anybody who wants it any way you can. And, of course, Goldman Sachs, who is up there at the top with the Illuminati and the world bankers and everybody else, they're going to seize the moment. Let's take the money. It's all about transfer of money, George, and that's it. And all I got to say to these Occupy people is, before you jump out there and get mad and start screaming, think about what you're doing. You may end up like Egypt. The wrong people are going to step in and take control of it. So keep an eye on it. Have a reason to be there. Have a solution to it. The solution is get back to community. Get back to local governments, local banks. The whole thing is they're transferred all to these mega banks, and that's what's screwing us. If you keep it local, they can't touch you.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it, and I agree with you. I mean, the banks that were big and that helped orchestrate this big mess are bigger now than they were before. They got all kinds of billions of dollars from the government. They're now really too big to fail. I think Bank of America has like 12% of the deposits in the country, bigger than ever. And none of those guys have gone to prison. I think if people are angry enough, one thing that should happen is some of these guys should go behind bars, the ones that did it. It is absolutely amazing to me that Goldman Sachs still has customers. When you see these revelations that have come out in the last couple of weeks, how they viewed their customers as rubes. They would orchestrate losses for some of them and not give it a second thought. How can you possibly invest your money with a company that has treated with disdain its own customers like that? Anyway, I appreciate the call, Mike. Good topic. First-time caller, Doug in Washington. Hi, Doug.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. I don't know if my story is as interesting as the ones that you just listened to, but just wanted to talk about, I had a visitation. I was reading Frank Peretti's book called In This Present Darkness, and I just finished it up around 3 o'clock in the morning, and I felt overwhelmed, and I offered a prayer up, and that the demons of my little town would be bound in chains and da-da-da-da, you know. And as I was praying, I tried to pray in tongues, and felt like this electrical shock coming down my arms, and it was traveling, and it scared me so bad I just quit and stopped. And anyway, I went to bed. As I was undressing, I turned around, and there was this being behind me. He was tall as the ceiling. It was an 8-foot ceiling. He was tall as the ceiling, And he was dressed oddly. He had like this bright yellow and blue striped shirt that went horizontal. He's wearing blue denim jeans with a rope for a belt. And then he had like these moccasin boots with fringes that came all the way up to his, high up on his calf. And he was translucent. I could actually see through him. But he wasn't really looking at me. He was kind of like looking off into the distance.
Did he say anything?
He didn't say anything. I was so scared. I just dropped to my knees right at his feet, and I started praying that, I would pray for protection. And when I opened my eyes, he was gone.
Ever happened before?
No. But after that, though, I woke up in the middle of the night and looked at the foot of my bed, and there were two sets of red eyes staring at me. And the one set of red eyes, when I looked up, you could see like a gleam in their eye. And he just kind of turned, you could just tell like his head was turning to the other and, like acknowledging that, that I was awake and that I had seen them. And, I just said, greater is he who is in me than he is in the world. And I went back to sleep. But after that, a lot of things started happening in my life that just went from bad to worse.
Sounds like you invited something into your life there that you gave him an opening, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. But, I came up with this prayer, though, that any demons within the sound of my voice be bound in chains and cast into hell by the blood of Jesus. And that seems to kind of clear the air. I threw the gauntlet down at Satan, and he just literally mopped the floor with me, basically.
Wow, that's a heck of a story. I have heard similar stories. People who open something up, who invite something in, maybe not consciously, but things come in, and your life is never the same. I hope you're able to get over this, though, and that it's not a permanent condition for you.
No, it's not. In a way, it's been a kind of a blessing. But like I said, it's just basically Satan. He took away my job, had a really good income, took away that away, took away my marriage, my family. Pretty much just, put me through the squeeze,
So, and you're sure that's Satan that did all that stuff. You didn't bring any of that on yourself. That was a demon that did it, and none of it's your fault?
Well, no, I had a, like I said, I had a boss who was a Catholic, and he decided to quit. And then I got this other boss who was, like a Satanist. And, and of course that went, we definitely...
Hey, Doug, I appreciate the call. I advise you to be careful there. Thanks for sharing your story with us, and thanks to the other callers as well. We'll come back to the phone lines and see what else is on your mind. I'm George Knapp, in tonight for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Wow, you're blowing me away here, Coast to Coast listeners. We've got UFOs and aliens. We've got demons, missing time, the Illuminati, Area 51, all in one night of conversation. Keep it coming. We'll go back to the phone lines, get to as many of your calls as we can right here on Coast to Coast AM. First-time caller, Lynn in Houston, Texas. Welcome to the party, Lynn. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mr. Knapp. It's a pleasure to speak with you. And I'd like to start off by saying how much absolute respect I have for your field of journalism. I catch your shows as much as possible, and I just got a ton of respect for you, sir.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
I have one quick comment, and I don't really know what the answer would be but I do have a question for that. The comment is that I have witnessed with my own two eyes, and keep in mind I was a non-believer until this day, even though I was interested in the subject of UFOs and, what's beyond our planet. It was at nighttime in a little town just outside San Antonio, the glowing type orbs that just absolutely defy gravity. Doing the craziest things you ever seen in the sky. And then the same area of, I guess you'd say, my back porch in the daytime. metallic type object, and it just blew my mind, to say the least.
Well, let's go back to the first one. These orbs at night. How big? How high? How long?
I couldn't tell you an altitude or anything like that. I would say the size of a large marble would be in the southeasterly sky from where I lived at, just outside San Antonio. And it was at the time just below what you would consider Orion's belt, just a reference in the sky. And then did a couple of little crazy zigzag things and then immediately shot what I would consider to outer space, to the point where I couldn't see it anymore. It was completely gone.
And how long was the duration? What's the duration of your sighting there?
I mean, I could see for miles and miles.
No, I mean, seconds, minutes?
It lasted for about 45 seconds to a minute. Unfortunately, it was, 2:30 in the morning. My son was 3 months old, and it was my turn to feed, I guess you could say, and give his bottle at nighttime, give my wife a break. And everybody's like, oh, you're crazy. What are you smoking? What are you drinking? Well, I don't drink, and I don't smoke, and don't do drugs. So no intoxication whatsoever. So needless to say, I still get goosebumps to this day thinking about it. And then the one that scared me, this one actually scared me, was the one I saw during the daytime. So, but the question I have, because of your expertise in this field, is I had a really good friend of mine who saw the Black Triangle. Do you know what that might possibly be?
Some friends of mine here in Las Vegas, there was an organization called NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science. And one of the projects they undertook some years ago, must have been about 10 years ago, was to study that whole Black Triangle thing. I think in the end, they concluded it was some sort of a military or intelligence platform, that the proximity of these sightings to Air Force bases, the fact that these things would fly along these routes that took them to these bases, suggested that they were traveling back and forth through known military installations. I think it's a guess, but that these are some sort of intelligence gathering platforms. Some folks have suggested to me there's things floating up there that just basically suck up all kinds of cell phone and computer signals and just send it all to these giant computers and data banks, and everything we say, every utterance, every email we send is somewhere on file. And that sounds fantastic, but somehow I don't have trouble believing it at some level.
I've heard things from it's part of Project Bluebeam to it's the Gray's motherships. I mean, and everything in between. And I personally would like to believe it's some sort of new stealth project or our new space shuttle that we don't know anything about yet. But
yeah, I think they've probably got all kinds of really advanced things that they haven't told us about and may never tell us about, especially if they're doing what some people suspect they're doing, because I don't know that would be legal, but that certainly wouldn't stop them. I also am open to the possibility that these great big triangles are, there's more than one kind. Maybe some of them are ours, and maybe some of them belong to somebody else, that they look the same.
From the wedge, which would be based on like supposedly the Aurora project, to the typical three lights with the three red lights with the one in the center, like you can see all over the internet and several shows that you've even been a part of.
Thank
you, sir. I appreciate your time, and like I said, you're an awesome journalist, and not just for this coast to coast type stuff, but this stuff you do in Vegas too. Appreciate you.
Well, thanks. We're glad you got through, and I would just add, though, that some of the characteristics as described in some of these encounters are these gigantic triangles can do things that no plane that we know of can do. Doesn't mean it's not ours, I suppose. Wildcard line, Alan in Ohio. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Okay. How's it going?
Oh, not too bad. Hey, I was watching a show tonight on history, I believe it was, Area 51 Revealed. And
right.
You were on there. And then I happened to catch in to, check in on the Insiders page, and I saw you were hosting tonight. And the thing that I wanted to ask was, have you had any further updates on the Skinwalker Ranch? The reason I ask that is on National Geographic, they were running a show called Navajo Cops.
Yeah.
And they're talking about skinwalkers on there.
Yeah, well, the term skinwalker, I had never heard it before. Started looking into the activity at the Utah Ranch that was being investigated by Bob Bigelow and his team. And we tried to interview Navajo and Hopi about it, academics and cops, and I was never able to pierce the veil. They wouldn't talk to me about it. They took it very seriously and felt that if they even mentioned it, that it might invite something bad into their lives. So we had to piece together bits and pieces of information from other sources. But I was encouraged to see the same show you're mentioning here. This, I think it's National Geographic that's been tagging along with Navajo cops.
Yes.
And, of course, they do. They take Skinwalker reports seriously. When tribal members say, hey, is a Skinwalker lurking around outside my house? They go out and investigate it, which is kind of enlightening and encouraging to some degree, because certainly cops that here in Las Vegas wouldn't go out and investigate something like that. If I were to call and say there's a Skinwalker, they might investigate me. Go ahead.
They had what appeared to be like a whole, there were seven or eight guys that went out and looked at this, and one of the lieutenant police officers had actually heard and saw something in the distance. But the cameraman for National Geographic actually caught a pair of eyes in a cave. And then they caught it before the cops caught it. And then when the police officers went up there to investigate it, they couldn't find anything in there. It just disappeared. But you could actually see the two glowing eyes inside this cave. I thought that was pretty cool. My idea on it is that they're interdimensional beings, not from the past, but from the future, that they're coming back. Maybe not human beings, but something... in our future that's coming back to maybe try to guide us or show us or tell us that something is further beyond us.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I'm open to all possibilities. I don't have enough information to draw a conclusion. I do know that the Navajo and Hopi and a lot of other tribes take the whole shapeshifter thing pretty seriously. And that even the Utes up there near that ranch that we're talking about had used sort of the Skinwalker legend or lore as a blanket explanation, an umbrella explanation for all kinds of weird stuff that have been going on. I'm certainly open to that whole interdimensional thing. That's one of the things that we explored in the book that we co-wrote. And, I remain open-minded and hope that someday I get some answers. But so far, I don't have them. Alan, thank you for the call and the questions. Mark in Westlake, Oregon. Hi, Mark.
Oh, good evening, George Knapp.
Good to have you with us. What's on your mind?
Thank you, George. Always great to speak with you again. It's been a while.
Yes.
And what you'd mentioned about the guest a few moments ago, just coming into this segment, being a really, how you say, eclectic? Is that the right word?
Sure.
I think that the guest tonight has been very unusual because I've been listening to Coast for many years and been a very unusual very interesting group of guests.
Great calls.
Callers, but they seem more like guests, a good number of them.
Hey, that lineup, that's what we're all about here, that kind of mix.
Well, you know, George, I'm a firm believer in that like energy attracts like energy. And I've noticed with different hosts, because I've listened to communications for years just over the general broadcast waves, and other programs also outside of the worthy one that you're on. And I find that each host carries a certain energy of people that they have more in common than the other groups with the other different hosts that are attracted to call in. And I get a good idea of, you know, what the general audience is like, what the mindset is in general from the overall tenure, texture of the callers. But at any rate, George, before I get on to my quick main point here, you're really to be commended. So I give you commendation, my personal commendation here as a listener. You carry the show so well. The show's almost over before it begins, so to speak. It's really fast. It goes by very fast because you hold the interest so well. And I just, we all thank you for that, of course.
Well, it seems like it's fast on my end, too. And as I've said a lot of times, it's the listener show. I mean, it works if you folks make it work, and it's working tonight. It's fun.
Yes, I've always said, so to speak, the host carries the show, and very, very good. So do the callers, but the host is first up to bat. But at any rate, George, I wanted to ask you, have you heard of a Dr. Bill Deagle?
No.
Well, Dr. Deagle is very interesting, and I'll be glad to give you his website. He's got one or two where you can learn all about him and email him if you wish as a guest on the show, and I'll quickly describe his credentials and knowledge to you, which you would be happy to come on and share. All of these areas that have been hit tonight, he can basically go into detail about. He's a medical doctor. He's about 60 years old. He's had a lot of experience. He has his own daytime three-hour radio show on the most popular alternative network. I don't know if I should mention it, so I'm just describing it as such. Same one Alex Jones is on. And he comes on 3 hours Monday through Friday, you know, from noon to 3. And what you have here is a man who's actually and has all the credentials and bona fides and everything that an excellent researcher, reporter such as yourself would require. He has worked underground Colorado for the black operations that take place down there. He's been taken on tours of the technology that exists down there. He's been told from individuals on a regular basis, basically. And he said all this on his program in the past. He's been told by different personnel down there exactly what goes on in each compartment, because, of course, if anything's going to be compartmentalized, it'll be the black operations. That's basically one of the definitions of it. So you have a guest here who is extremely intelligent, extremely eloquent, so to speak, well-spoken, you will have one fantastic show if you have Dr. Bill Deagle on. And I give you my personal recommendation as a listener, but I'd be happy to give you his websites now, or I can actually leave them with your producer if you'd like, George.
Yeah, you can leave it with the producer. I'm sure I can find it based on the clues you've given me there. Sounds intriguing. I will mention it to the producers who book that sort of thing, and we'll check it out. Thanks for calling, Mark. Appreciate it. Dan Truckin in Iowa. Dan, hope you're careful out there.
Hey, how you doing, George?
All right, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. I saw a program once on TV about these boulders down in South America. Have you ever heard of them? Big round boulders are like perfectly round.
I'm not sure, but go ahead. Tell me about them.
Well, there's these boulders, they're granite, and they're huge, like the height of a man. And they're like almost perfectly round, and they can't figure out what caused them, how they, you know, there's no chisel marks, no laser marks or anything like that. And I had a theory on how they were formed.
So they couldn't, are they naturally formed? Or you're thinking they're manufactured formed
by? They think that they're manufactured by humans, like, you know, like rubbing up, you know, like sanding them down and stuff like that.
Huh.
Or, no. But I don't think that's how they were formed. Have you ever seen a BB made?
Nope.
Okay, what they do is they take liquid copper and they drop it from a height. And as it falls, it creates a sphere.
Oh.
Then it passes through some mist. They miss some water. And as it solidifies, BBs are, that's how you make BBs for BB guns.
So you could do the same thing with molten rock?
Well, a long time ago, there was on the Yucatan Peninsula, there was an asteroid that hit. They say it wiped out the dinosaurs, right?
Yes.
Well, wouldn't you think the force of that would liquefy granite?
I think you're right, or maybe a volcanic eruption could do something like that.
So it hit, and it throws all this debris up in the air as it's falling. Wouldn't it make spheres like BBs falling lead, you know, lead falling or copper falling?
I think that's a pretty good theory.
Well, I just didn't know if it was a good theory or not, and I thought I'd ask your opinion on it. I didn't know if you knew anything about those boulders down in South America or not.
I don't, but I like your theory. I like the comparison to BBs, because I didn't know that one either. I learn something every time I host this. Usually I learn more than one thing along the way. Dan, I appreciate the call and the information. If anybody has any ideas on those big rocks and boulders, let us know. Time for one more quick call. Carlos in San Diego. Good morning, Carlos.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
Okay.
I'm doing good. About, I want to say, two weeks ago, I lived near the border. I could see Tijuana pretty good from where I live. I could see, you know, the houses, the lights, and the horizon of Mexico. And about 7:30, and this is before we changed the time, so it was kind of dark. It wasn't so much light as it was now. So anyways, I was walking to get water, and I'm walking back home. I'm in the parking lot of the store where I bought water, and I'm looking. I have my iPod on, listening to music, and I'm looking at the horizon of Tijuana, Mexico, and all of a sudden, a green, neon, blue light shoots out of the horizon, and it just illuminates the whole sky for about 3 seconds.
Shoots out from the ground like a rocket or something?
When I saw it, it kind of made the impression like someone shot it out, like almost like kind of like a light show, but this thing was huge. Like it shot out the corner of the horizon and lit up the whole sky, and it changed colors between green, blue, neon, purple for about 3 or 4 seconds, and it shot back into the point where it came from, almost like it had an original source. They didn't come from the middle of the sky or the clouds. There was no clouds. You could see all the stars in the sky. And I seen it, and I just stood still, and I took the earbuds out of my headphones, and I was just shocked. I couldn't believe what I saw, and I looked around. There's nobody in the parking lot but me.
I'll tell you what, Carlos, I wish we had more time to hear about your sighting, but there was a study a long time ago the U.S. government conducted in secrecy. It was called Project Twinkle, and it was a study of these green fireballs that were seen over New Mexico over classified installations like Los Alamos National Lab. Very interesting stuff, Project Twinkle. You might want to look that up. Thanks to all the callers. Man, it was a lot of fun. Time went by really fast. I really appreciate it. Also, Dan and Sean and Tom there for helping me through this thing. To my guests, Karen Green and Alan Palmer for telling us about the Area 51 exhibit. I'm going to be back on Sunday night. I've got David Politis talking about a chilling new book that he's written about hundreds of people who've disappeared under really strange circumstances. If you got nothing to do Sunday night, tune in and check it out. Thanks to George Norrie for having me sit in. Good night, everyone.